Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, and welcome to the Ghibli Attack, the podcast that leafs through the library of films from the world's greatest animation studio, Studio Ghibli. I'm Michael Leader, and I've seen the lot of them.
And I'm Jake Cunningham, and now I have too.
So join us on our quest into the glorious world of Ghibli. Jake, you've seen the lot of them too.
I have. I've seen them all. Well, I saw them all a couple of weeks ago.
Well, we always knew we were going to do these two films as well as part of these mini-series, but it's quite scary now. The Padawan has become the master.
Yeah, the spreadsheet has been filled.
I mean, we need to have a whole new spreadsheet now.
Yeah, we've got to figure out what happens next. But it's been a ride, hasn't it?
It really has. And we're going to bow out with Hayao Miyazaki's debut feature, The Castle of Cagliostro, all the way back in 1979, a good 6 years before they found the studio, years before Nausicaa, years before Ponyo, Totoro, and all those people, we have Lupin the Third.
A character I've definitely heard of and know who that person is, and understand that he has had a lot of spin-off things before and after this, and I really know a lot about him.
It's a mega franchise in Japan. Many anime series, other features, manga by Monkey Punch, long running. And it's a bit strange in a way, isn't it, that Miyazaki's feature debut is part of this big franchise, thinking that he would become eventually one of the great original filmmakers of his or any generation. But it's the starting point that everything else comes from.
Yeah, I'm really curious to hear how on earth this all happened, that we are going back to the start now, and this is our second prequel, and figuring out how Lupin the Third, the cast of Cagliostro, directed by Hayao Miyazaki, actually happened.
Super thief Lupin pulls off a thrilling heist at a Monte Carlo casino, only to discover that the spoils are counterfeit. So he traces the fake bills to the country of Cagliostro, where an evil count is generating forged money and distributing it worldwide. With partners in tow, Lupin heads to Cagliostro, where he also finds a promise of hidden treasure and Clarice, a beautiful princess in need of rescuing from the Count's dastardly clutches.
Okay, Michael. In our previous episode, we spoke about The Little Norse Prince, 1968.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually been a long time since then, before we get to this film.
11 years, yeah. Let's start where we left off in the previous episode, which is when Little Norse Prince was released in 1968. It was a box office failure, and the process completely soured the crew's relationship with Toei Animation. So Miyazaki and Takahata jumped ship in the early 70s. They set up their own shingle. And over the next decade, they work on increasingly high-profile, respected animation projects such as Heidi, Girl of the Alps, Future Boy Conan. Takahata directed Heidi, Miyazaki directed Future Boy Conan. They also work on the anime series of Lupin the Third, adapted from the manga by Monkey Punch, as I said. But they were brought on mid-season after the original director was fired, and they turned the series into a more family-friendly proposition. In the process, they made Lupin himself more of a happy-go-lucky, upbeat protagonist. And the results were a hit. They pulled off quite a reboot there. So flash forward a few years, and there are plans for a new feature film based on Lupin. And Miyazaki is brought on board at the suggestion of the animation director for that project, who is Yasuo Otsuka, who we mentioned last episode, brought on Takahata for Little Norse Prince, which is just a little glimpse at how powerful animation directors could be when they choose who the actual directors of the films they want to work with are. And this would then become Miyazaki's feature debut at the ripe old age of 38, which is a bit older than most of these first-time filmmakers we've talked about. Unlike Little Norse Prince, this was a smooth and quick production. 7.5 months from start to finish, with only 5 months of actual active production.
And they say that Takahata projects are slow. What?
Exactly. Where did you get that reputation from? The film was released in December 1979, grossed over 600 million yen, chalked up as a failure. It wasn't a huge success. And Miyazaki wasn't really happy with his work on it. There's a quote from an interview where he says, "The Castle of Cagliostro was like a clearance sale of all I had done with Lupin and in my Toei days. I don't think I added anything new. You can't use a sullied middle-aged guy to create fresh work that will wow viewers. I realised I should never do this again, neither did I want to. 1980 was my year of being mired in gloom." I'd like to know what a year of being happy is like for Miyazaki.
Yeah, those are the kind of quotes from him don't often pop up. I feel like every year is mired in gloom, yeah. Is it not?
But Castle Cagliostro has an incredible reputation that grows over time as its influence spreads throughout the animation industry, particularly internationally. There's a very widespread but false rumor that Steven Spielberg saw the film and at some point said that it contained one of cinema's greatest car chases. And some people have taken from the time frame that maybe he saw it and it went into inspiring parts of Indiana Jones. But there's absolutely no founding for that rumor. And I think it even popped up on the cover of some of the old Manga UK DVDs. Like, it's there, like a quote at the top from Steven Spielberg, one of cinema's great car chases. And bizarre how that can snowball and take hold. But we do know that it had influence elsewhere. And weirdly, this might be the Miyazaki film with the most confirmed influence and inspiration and references throughout Western animation. And let me go through a few of these. John Lasseter, formerly of Pixar, speaks of seeing Castle of Cagliostro as a young animator and how it had a huge impact on him and his generation of fellow animators. And you see that from the 80s onwards. So John Musker and Ron Clements, the great directors of the Disney Renaissance, paid homage to the clock tower sequence at the end of this film in the Disney movie Basil the Great Mouse Detective. There's a sort of sequence on Big Ben at the end of that film. Likewise, there's a riff on the clock tower sequence in the Batman the Animated Series TV series in the early 90s, an episode called The Clock King. And sequences in Atlantis the Lost Empire, that great forgotten late 90s animated film, apparently inspired by the scenes of the flooded city in Castle of Cagliostro, and even the Simpsons movie. Apparently in the director's commentary of the Simpsons movie, there's a sequence where Bart is on the rooftops of the houses.
Right.
And the way he moves is apparently inspired by the way that Lupin would crawl across the top of the castle when he's trying to...
That's great, yeah.
Find his way in.
Yeah, well, we'll definitely talk about the way he moves, yeah. I think.
I just find it really interesting that Miyazaki would go on to make these humongous films, Totoro onwards, but this is the one where we have confirmed doffs of the cap.
Yeah, I think we see references and parody of the future films, but we don't necessarily just see at it as a humble respect as we do with the influence that this would have.
And maybe it's the time that it landed, where a new generation was coming up. But it's fascinating to watch this film now as well. I wonder what you made of it.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices
down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Jake, lots to chew on there. And as we've said, you're coming into a film that's part of a franchise with no knowledge of the franchise around it.
Yeah, this is something that I was really intrigued about. I feel like there's probably a better example than this, but like J.J. Abrams coming into Mission Impossible 3 as his first feature film. And now that we've seen what J.J. Abrams would do in Star Trek and Super 8 and Into Darkness and his other TV bits, now we know what to expect in a J.J. Abrams film. And we go back to Mission Impossible and we see like little bits coming through there that give us a sense of that identity, but working within a franchise that is so recognizable as well and whose characters we know. And in a way, that's quite a good training ground, because you've got the reliance of the audience coming to give you kind of some comfort in the fact that they're already going to know the characters. So you don't have to worry about that aspect of it. And you can play around with other bits as well. And watching this, there are bits where we see the Miyazaki that we know come through. And we spoke about this with Little North Prince. And it's those bits that are really interesting.
Yeah.
But there's some stuff here that I think we don't see him ever do again that are actually really good.
Right.
This film is really funny in a very like slapstick cartoon Saturday morning tunes type way. And he wouldn't do that again. And that is Bart Simpson running across the roofs in the Simpsons movie. It's that style of character animation, that Lupin, or I just want to say that I love how everyone says it in the film as Lupin, which is wonderful. Maybe we should shift at this point to Lupin. He moves in such a strange way. At some points, he's like a plank of wood. At another point, he's a snake. It's brilliant. And we don't see that character animation from Miyazaki in the later stuff.
He doesn't go as wonky ever again, and that's a word I love to use. You can see shared DNA between here and Pazu in Castle in the Sky, who I always use as a gold standard of character animation for Miyazaki. The way that he's always all over the place, he's climbing up, trying to run up walls and scrabble about. But unlike Little Norse Prince, which we talked about last episode, where we said that it looks like it comes from another universe, where the rules of animation, the look of animation, the feel of animation isn't there yet. You flash forward 11 years to this film. This is very much in the same industry as everything that comes later. This is recognizable. The dogma and the tenets of what makes Japanese animation have been set by this point. And there's something very familiar and welcoming there. I greatly enjoy this film. I think that it's the sort of film that Miyazaki would later look back on, and when he says that anime was a mistake and he's looking and he's, you know, smoking, it's films like this.
Well, you said with The Little Norse Prince that that is more like a history lesson, that you're going to get your notes to go alongside it so you can fill in the gap in your personal history of the films. And that's what you're going to that film for. Mm-hmm. You'd never put it on a Saturday afternoon when you're just chilling.
Mm-hmm.
This is that film.
Yeah. It's a great way to while away an hour and a half. And it hits the ground running. It's so full of, like, personality.
I heard Steven Spielberg say that there's a car chase at the start of this film that's one of the best in history.
Yeah, when you went for a drink with him the other night, that's what he said, right? But that car chase is great. It's all there. Everything that we've said about Miyazaki, about his love of cars, his love of the way that these objects and vehicles fit together. You actually see a car fall apart in this. There's so much focus on that car chase and the gadgets and the nitro boost that Lupin has in his little car. It's really, really cool. And that's the thing. It's this notion of cool, which is what Miyazaki would always have trouble with later. After he makes this Nausicaa, Castle in the Sky, Porco Rosso, he never really makes a film that revels in the spectacle and the adventurous spirit again. And particularly guns, particularly the daring do that goes into this sort of lifestyle and experience. He wouldn't do that again. And it's quite invigorating to see all the power that he can wield as an animator and his collaborators, of course. He's not just making this himself. Just put into a very simple caper movie.
Yeah, and he's fast and loose with the rules of the world. Like, that's what's really fun. Like, it's like Scooby-Doo, mm-hmm. like the physics of it. It doesn't matter. Like, the car will be as big or as small as it needs to be. It can fit as much in as it needs to be. You can, like, a disguise is going to make you look exactly like someone. Yes. And no one's going to question it. And you can wear a scuba suit over a normal suit. And when you take off the scuba suit, your regular suit is going to be completely dry.
I think it's in True Lies, the James Cameron film where Arnold Schwarzenegger does that, right?
Maybe that was a reference to this, because he's heard that it's got one of the all-time great scuba scenes.
I mean, yeah, Jim Cameron and Steven Spielberg, best buds.
Yeah.
But what isn't quite there yet for you?
I think definitely a depth of character, particularly within the women, is most obvious in this one. They don't get much to do, or their job is to just be cool and sexy fighting spy ladies, and you compare that to everything that he would do in the later part of his career. But then it's not like Lupin or Jigen have that much depth to them either.
Mm-hmm.
And he's maybe just focusing on this as a kid's adventure. They're not that worried about that. This is spectacle, this is fun, and we're not going to get bogged down in character that much.
Mm-hmm.
And his best villains, kind of, well, they're not villains. We've spoken about this, that they will live in that grey area. Whereas certainly in the early half of this career, we said in Castle in the Sky, that's one of the irks with that our baddie is a baddie. And that's plain and simple. And that's the same here. I mean, this guy is a lot of fun for sure, but it's just, here's your baddie.
Yeah. What I do love about this is its genre. It's Miyazaki. Miyazaki creates his own genre as he goes on, cobbles together many traditions, many influences, inspirations, and his own worldview. In this one, it's him working within a genre which is this sort of spy pastiche caper. And you have the score, which in its own right is very influential. The music for the Lupin the Third series in general, very influential, and is now for those funk head sort of vinyl collectors, is quite a collector's item. But also the way that it is still obsessed with Central Europe, this sort of Liechtenstein, sort of like half Swiss, half Italy. Where is this country? Mm. It's kind of around just northern Italy, right? The cars.
Yeah, I mean, there's an autogyrocopter.
Yes, of course.
Which is so him, which is lovely. We've got blue sky, we've got green fields.
Yeah.
And they're in those particular tones that we want to see from them.
But it's in service of a very European, I say very European, but it's this sort of post-North by Northwest type of genre where it is this escalation towards a central location, towards a central spectacle. You know, Basil, the great mouse detective, borrowing from the clock tower sequence as its final moment, is very Hitchcockian. You know, Alfred Hitchcock, as a filmmaker, was the person who pioneered the idea that a thriller could resolve in some great location. And this has that castle, which is an amazing design. When that bridge first appears that connects the tower to the rest of the castle, it's just wonderful. And when you have those great panning shots where it just shows how deep the castle goes, it's a wonderful bit of design. And that is something that Miyazaki would bring to the bathhouse 20 odd years later with Spirited Away, but it's here in service of a sort of Franco-Italian heist movie. And I know you love heist movies. Do you think it works as that on the scale of something like a Mission Impossible movie, or is it still a bit lower down?
I'm going to go back to like a Scooby-Doo type of thing. That's what it is, an extended one of that type of mystery heist stories. And that's great. What makes a heist film brilliant to me is that constant negotiation between the story and the audience as to who has more information, that you are constantly thinking one of you is ahead of the other, and then you are given this little bit of information that X they don't have, and vice versa. And I never really had that. I was never thinking, oh gosh, I can't wait to figure out what's going to be in the next scene. It didn't have me like that, like I think a really great heist film does. And that's because it can be so peculiar with its gadgetry and its physics that he can instantly MacGyver himself out of any situation. So you don't necessarily have a sense of dread or worry about it. Like, this guy can basically swim upstream.
That is a great sequence, though.
Yeah, and this is that like floppy character animation that just brilliant stuff. And you mentioned the clock tower as well, and that's got a feeling of modern times to it as well. The Charlie Chaplin stuff, and that it's really rooted in physicality, this whole film. And the character design, that he is thin, he's slinky, and you've got our big wide-jawed villain. He's nurturing that focus on character that we mentioned wasn't there in Little Norse Prince, that it was a bit slapdash and there wasn't this connection between story and character design, but we absolutely get that in this one.
It's a fun one to rewatch, I think. But I'd love to know where this would land for you in relation to the proper Ghibli films and then Miyazaki at his full potential.
Yeah, I think it's about time we move on to the leaderboard. So, Michael, we're not going to actually put this on the Ghibli leaderboard because it's not a Ghibli film, but if I were to push you and ask for maybe a rough spot where this one might land, where do you think it might sit?
Certainly not bottom tier. I think that this has the genius and the ease of watching that puts it beyond the likes of The Cat Returns, Tales from Earthsea, etc. The big question for me is whether this, in the annals of Hayao Miyazaki, would this be bottom, or would this actually overtake what is currently bottom in my ranking, I think your ranking as well, which is Howl's Moving Castle. Do I prefer this to Howl's Moving Castle? And I wonder if I do. I certainly would relish going and watching Cagliostro right now more than rewatching Howl's Moving Castle. But it feels so weird to say that because of the 25 years between those films, standards had changed so much, and there's so much in Howl's Moving Castle. Howl's Moving Castle, of course, was a film that took years to create, teams and teams of animators. Cagliostro is something that Miyazaki made in 5 months. And by saying that, we're almost getting closer to something that Isao Takahata loves, which is he loves taking away the sheen of animation so that you can feel the intentionality of the animator's work. And that's something that's all in Cagliostro, right?
Michael, is this is just you talking yourself into ranking it above House Moving Castle, which I think you've successfully done.
I'm not going to do it lightly because I know that our dislike of House Moving Castle has been controversial for some listeners. But what would you think, Jane?
I'd agree with you. You know, I'd slot it in above Tales from Earthsea for sure, above Ocean Waves, above Howl's. Ariatti, Cat Returns, those small ones that we're not such big fans of. Definitely not scraping the bottom of the barrel with this one, for sure.
It's a really good one to go and watch. It really is. Maybe it's overlooked a little bit because it's part of a franchise, because it's not part of that main drag of Ghibli films. Sure, maybe we're being kind on this film because of its limited ambitions. Mm. We said with Nausicaa, well, I said with Nausicaa that I'd much rather watch Princess Mononoke, and that makes Nausicaa in some ways redundant in my eyes. And that's just because literally 3 years, 4 years after this, Miyazaki's ambitions just grew.
There is no other Miyazaki film like this one.
True.
And that's why I want to praise it and give it a slot that's above those other films.
I can't argue with that.
And also it's really accessible. So if you haven't seen it, go and check it out.
And let us know what you think, because we have the Twitter account at Ghibliotech, and that's where you can castigate us for putting House Moving Castle so low, or watch Castle Cagliostro and let us know what you think.
And you can keep up with both of us on Twitter as well. Michael, you're there as at Michael J. Leader.
And Jake, you are Jake H. Cunningham. This is the final episode of the mini-series, though, Jake.
It is.
What are we going to do?
Well, I suppose we've been mentioning this in a quite casual way on the podcast, like, what do we do next?
Yeah.
But now we actually do need to know. So really, if you've got any suggestions, what should Ghibliotech become?
Well, we've not reached the end of the track just yet. We're going to Tokyo. We've mentioned that. We'll come back. Who knows what we'll come back with, but we'll put stuff out in the podcast from that
Something
trip.
Something I am very excited about. For the first time in almost two decades, I have a games console.
Exactly. So who knows how we might use that games console. And of course, Christmas is coming up. We had such fun last Christmas getting Steph in the studio and having quizzes and carols and so on. Gifts.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we've got to do that. Steph is the Gomon, I think, for us, really? Isn't she? Like, if you are Lupin.
And you have the anti-tank rifle.
Yeah, I'm Jigen, scouting you out, defending you from afar.
Steph comes in with her samurai sword.
Yeah, and she'll cut a man in two, but, and we won't even see the blade come out.
What a wonderful way to celebrate Christmas, Jake. But anyway, until then, you can keep in touch with us at Ghibliotech. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back soon.
Ghibliotech is a Little Dot Studios production. Our music is made by Anthony Ng, our artwork is by Sophie Moe, and Jamie Mazner is our audio wizard. The show is produced by Michael Leader, Jake Cunningham, Harold McShill, and Steph Watts. That's me.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for sticking with us through the credits. We mentioned earlier that we couldn't find any concrete proof that Spielberg even saw, let alone was inspired by the Castle of Cagliostro, but there is a connection between the film and the director. In The Goonies, which was produced by Steven Spielberg's Amblin Entertainment Company, there's a scene at an arcade, and you can clearly see a cabinet for the game Cliffhanger, and that's the Laserdisc video game that adapts and redubs sequences lifted from the Castle of Cagliostro. So there you have it. Spielberg and Lupin together at last.